Welcome to Disability Empowerment Now, Season 3 Finale. I'm your host, Keith Murphy DiGincini. Today I'm talking to Jacob Yandour, who is the composer of the Broadway Cats recording of How to Dance in Ohio.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me.
Jacob, it's an absolute pleasure. Before we get to how you got involved with the Cats recording and what attracted you to the project, how we met is by happenstance. I was here at the beginning of the year, and being an avid theater goer, I get most of my theater tickets through TDF, Theater Development Fund, a wonderful organization. And I started my Broadway theater tour with seeing the show for the first time. I loved it so much, and at that time, you guys had not finished recording the Cats album, so I decided to see it again. And when you pay for a membership, they randomly assign you a seat that very day. And it just so happens I was in the row in front of some of your very dear friends who you were seeing, and I couldn't help but overhear because I was in the aisle seat, and I grabbed your arm, not really, but it must have felt like that. It did to me, and I'm the one who did the grabbing. And we started talking, and at that time, I had handed you every business card I had and said, please pass these along to whoever does the PR, because I would love to interview all of the Cats members. I still would love to do that. And luckily, the Cats recording came out. I've listened to it probably 50 times in the week alone. And so how did you first get involved with the project, and how did you meet your creative writing partner who wrote the lyrics?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's so great to see you again. And thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I so remember that night meeting you, and I was so touched, and I'm so glad we're able to reconnect and have this discussion today. So Rebecca Milosic, who is my songwriting partner, she and I met at the Graduate Musical Theater Writing Program at NYU, which is a two-year program for musical theater writers. And they roughly pick 15 composers and then 15 words people, as they call them. So they're encouraged to write the lyrics and the book. So Rebecca and I were paired together halfway through our first year and on an assignment, and we just loved working with each other so much, and we also became very fast friends. So we decided to work together the second year on a full-length musical. And so that was it for us. We just knew we were each other's, songwriting partners and or collaborators. And so we've been working together for about, 12 years, I believe. And Yeah, long time. So we definitely have a brother-sister relationship, and it's
Yeah, you certainly do, because the lyrics and music to this show really marry together, and we'll get into that a bit later. And the fabulous documentary, HBO original documentary, that the story and the musical it's based on. But how did you and Rebecca get attached to?
So I was looking, we were looking for a new project. This was in 20 at late 2016, and I was home one night just looking for something to watch, and I came across the title How to Dance in Ohio, and I'm from Ohio, so I initially, and funny enough, Rebecca is too, and she but she heard her family move to Fresno, California when she was in junior high.
A wee bit different.
Yeah, wee bit different. So but we didn't meet till we got until we were at grad school. So I see this title. I'm from Ohio. I was like, what? It's a beautiful title. What is this? So I click on it, and then it said in Columbus, comma. I'm like, that's my hometown. This is weird. And then I read the synopsis, and it said a group of autistic young adults learning how to transition into adulthood by preparing for a spring formal. And my sister was finally given her proper autism diagnosis around that time. So she was 19 years old, and she so it was about 4 months prior to me finding the documentary. So I was like, I have to watch this. And I started watching it, and it just completely sang to me because it was all about human connection. It was about a community. And I often think, musical theater is such a community and is often about community. And the themes are so relatable, learning how to be
Absolutely.
independent, so it and they're universal. So that's emotional and it sings, So I wrote to her immediately, and our agent at the time, our agent, and they completely agreed. They were like, oh my God, I think there's something here. And so our agent set us up with the filmmaker, Alexandra Shiva, and we met with her a few months later and pitched our thought process and our ideas, and she loved it. And she was like, well, I don't think this could be a musical. I never thought this could be a musical, but okay, you have my blessing to start working on spec material. And spec material is when you work on songs, and it's like exploratory material. Like, what's the sound of the show? How do we think, the lyrics, flow, all of that kind of stuff. So yeah. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
It's just I've watched the documentary several times, and I'm glad I saw the show first going into it as a virgin with no pre-notion, because rewatching the documentary, it everything is literally there. It's almost scary how much things are there. I mean, if you just add the music, it's just like that's the show. It's a massively bigger cast. I love how Dr. Amigo, the real Dr. Amigo, actually came to the closing night. I hope he's there for the reunion show, because I remember telling him about this blue crush velvet suit that I usually wear, and I did bring it this time. And
Oh, amazing. He will be there at the reunion concert.
the actual show, and I managed to get this off eBay and just ordered the Cats album. and you've made money off me through Amazon and iTunes. So good job, both you, Rebecca. But it's, and so you have a personal connection. Does Rebecca and did, and I don't want to assume this, but did the cast and crew watch the documentary together in preparing to bring these very real people to life?
Yeah. Thank you.
They're not gone. It's to
right.
Bring their stories to the stage.
To the stage, absolutely. So yes, Rebecca is neurodivergent, and she has Tourette's syndrome. So this has been like a beautiful, you know, sort of way of expressing herself. And Sammy Cannell's brother is also autistic. So we all have personal connections in some way, which is wonderful. And that was very important to us as we were creating, you know, bringing the team together and you know, the head of our team. I want to go back a little bit.
Yeah.
And because the huge part of the development of this piece was Hal Prince. And Hal, for those who don't know Hal Prince, he was a legendary director, producer of so many shows, a lot of Stephen Sondheim shows, Sweeney Todd, and Company, and Pacific Overtures. But then he also directed Phantom of the Opera and Kissing Spider-Woman and producers of West Side Story and Fiddler on the Roof, you know. So he was the grandfather of Broadway. So his granddaughter is autistic, and his daughter Daisy Prince is best friends with Alexandra Sheba, the filmmaker, and did not know this at all at the time. And Alexandra wanted to explore autism, and the film actually started to be about Lucy, who is a house granddaughter. She decided that they wanted to show a broader, not just one perspective, but a broader community. That's how they were then put in touch with Amigo Family Counseling in Columbus, Ohio. But the film is actually dedicated to Lucy. Had no idea when I first saw the document. It was just all these different kismet moments.
Yeah.
Anyways, so around that time then, we befriended producers Ben Holtzman and Sammy Lopez, and Ben was Hal Prince's assistant at the time, and Hal was very much a mentor of Ben's and was encouraging him to start a project from the ground up. And so Ben and Sammy had seen a show of ours at City Center called Ringer, which was a TYA show, family, you know, a theater for young audiences. One of their friends was in the cast. Danny Kornfeld, who also made his Broadway debut in Harmony this year, so we were all like making our debuts together, which was super cool. But so they loved our writing, they loved our work, and so then we're talking, and we said we found this documentary, and we have Alexandra's blessing, and Ben put the pieces together, and went to Hal and said, I think I found your next musical. And so then he brought us in, and Hal decided to direct it. And he was our first, you know, our original director. We worked with him for 2 years until he sadly passed away. And we literally got his last round of notes a few days before he passed. So, I mean,
wow.
Yeah, it's a huge testament to this.
Wow.
He worked his entire life.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
It's incredible. So and Sammy Cannell, when she took the reins over, she got all of his scripts and his notes, and really used, you know, his vision as her true north, you know. So that's kind of more connections and how the piece was developed. But one thing he said to us early on is, do not put the documentary on the stage. Because documentaries and theater are very different mediums, right? And so documentaries are more exploratory, and they don't necessarily, they have, you know, the idea of the dance and getting to the dance is sort of the dramatic impetus of the documentary, but you have to have so much more to create conflict and drama on stage. So he really encouraged, and we had Alexander's blessing to just make our own thing. So yes, we have these characters and these real, you know, these real life people that we all got to meet them. We all flew out to Columbus and met everyone at the center, which for us, it was like, oh my gosh, we're meeting, you know, Beyonce and Taylor Swift, you know, these, you know, big celebrities in our minds.
So you met them.
Correct.
Did they see the show when it was finally up?
So yeah, so we did our out of town tryout in Syracuse, New York, in the fall of 2023. No, 2022, sorry. I don't know what year we're in. And so a bunch of clients from the center and their families came out to see the premiere, as well as Dr. Amigo and his husband and daughter.
How was that, particularly for the clients to see themselves portrayed by very authentic actors, but 10 years in the past, which is the documentary happened in 2013. It didn't premiere until 2015. It won a Peabody, I believe.
That's correct.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that we could talk all night long about that, but just give me a snippet of what was their reaction.
Well, it was super cool. So backtracking a little bit, when we went to meet them at the center, Dr. Amigo pretty much held like a town hall for us, where all the clients were there. You know, we all sat in a circle. Do you remember the brain picking scene?
Yes.
That was inspired by our visit there. So Dr. Amigo really had a styrofoam head, and he had note cards, you know, attached to the head. And there were all questions about the musical adaptation and sort of, you know, how we were to treat the show. And so they had so many profound questions of, I mean, the most profound question was, are the characters going to have an autism accent? And we had never heard that term before. And what they meant was like the stereotypical, you know, are you basically going to treat us like stereotypes? And we were like, absolutely not. You know, or the whole,
and
that,
you
that's not the whole point.
Absolutely do not do that at all.
Thank you.
I think the cats, the seven, would flat out refuse to do the show. As
oh, 100%.
Well should.
Absolutely. So that was, you know, but then we had other fun, you know, questions. I remember Jessica, she raised her hand and she goes, "Why is this just happening now?"
That's a very good question.
And then she was like, "Is Selena Gomez going to play me?" it was so sweet.
Yeah.
So so they were very much involved, and it was a beautiful moment for all of us to come together and our intentions and you know, very much a, you know, they're a part of the family. So so then when we got to Syracuse, only Jessica and Caroline and their families came to see the show. And they were sitting right by each other, and it was so sweet because I think Caroline had a little more anxiety because we talked about her ex-boyfriend Jay, and so she wasn't with Jay anymore, and so she was really nervous about that.
Yeah.
And Jessica was really comforted. She goes, "Caroline, it's just a story. It's just You know,
Yeah.
it's okay. And so anyway, after that, she calmed her down, but they leapt to their feet after the opening number, and it was, the just it was a huge celebration. That was a beautiful moment. And then everybody for opening night, which was truly the
Wow.
best nights of my life. I'll never, never forget that.
Yeah, I mean, to be a fly on the wall
Oh,
of
it
that,
was.
I mean, it's
I'm getting
just,
goosebumps right now just thinking
yeah.
about
And
it.
what was going through their head of they're showing me 10 years ago, and it's like I mentioned to you when we met, because I had seen the show already, that the music which you wrote beautifully, by the way,
Oh, thank you.
reminded me emphatically of the prom, and that really touched you. And I also saw that musical twice, within the same week, actually. It was
Oh.
that addicting. I don't need to always see myself on the stage. I mean, and Dear Evan Hansen, Fun Home, all these musicals are very captivating because they are very true to life and based on very true stories. And that, for me, as a social commentator, that's very intoxicating to know that these people actually existed, still do. And it's just Phantom, Les Mis, great show, Jesus Christ Superstar, great show, West Side Story, all of the standard. Nothing wrong with
No.
those. They're the bedrock of theater, and musicals, but like Rent, Hamilton, all of these social commentary showed, some of them fiction, most of them are not, though. They broaden the mindset. Next to Normal is another great one that talks about mental illness, in a very authentic way. And when you can talk about very serious subjects in musicals, it's brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, long
Well,
attention.
and I think that's what attracts us to the theater, right?
Yeah.
Is finding those themes and finding that emotion. And you want to feel like, I've always said, I want my music to feel like you've had the biggest hug,
Yeah.
and I know that's why I'm brought here,
Yeah.
and that's my purpose in I think in my lifetime. And
And
sorry, go ahead.
so important, question, because casting the original seven, I mean, the reason why I saw it so much, and the reunion show is coming up, and that will be my fourth time. But and your big poster on Instagram, there were people who were seeing it upwards of 20 times,
I
and
know.
that just blew my head off. But authentically casting is so important,
So
and you
important.
unfortunately don't see that often. Obviously, you weren't directly involved with that project, but
We
how?
actually were, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It was
Please
amazing. It
correct
was,
me.
yeah, no worries. It was, you know, the casting process is a huge feat. You know, the creative team is a part of it, the producers are a part of it, obviously the casting directors, the director, the music director, you know, and so it was a beautiful experience. And I really have to hand it, especially to one of our casting directors, Micah Johnson-Levy. She just killed the process. She's such a revolutionary, and I one of the best process one of the best parts of this process has been getting to know her and becoming a friend with her, and I'm thrilled she was a part of this anyway. But it all started on social media, you know, before we started our first reading. So we did our first reading, which is called a 29-hour reading. So you only get 29 hours to rehearse the material and present the material to, you know, potential investors and producers. Yeah, it's intense. And so, you know, and so we put out a post, and we had people auditioning from all over the world, actually. And we really started this grassroots sort of way. And we've been working closely with CoLab Theater Group, which is an organization for different people with different disabilities, and providing arts and arts education to them. And so they've been our, they handled all of our anti-ableism training, all of that stuff that you saw online. They're just so wonderful. So, you know, they worked together along with our autistic consultants to, you know, provide information about the show. And so we got all these self-tapes around. And I have to tell you, it was the hardest thing because there were so
I can't
many.
even imagine how hard it was.
Oh my gosh. And then so the original seven that we had for the reading, you know, are the seven ended up coming to Broadway with us. And so then the process became even harder than when we had to audition for the swings and understudies for Broadway. I mean, and especially because, you know, the show got more recognition, and I mean, it was the hardest. We could cast, you know, the show five times over, you know, and it's like, oh, we can only cast five people, you know, this is so hard, so hard. So, you know, but that it's very encouraging for future productions and future, you know, whatever ends up happening. So, it was a really amazing process. But what's so cool too about it is, you know, we wrote these characters, you know, based off of real people, but half of the what the characters, you know, became are these seven people, you know, and their own experiences, and so, you know, they really helped create the show, you know, which was beautiful.
That's wonderful. I don't want to say main characters or main couple because
Right.
it's very much as it should be a ensemble cast. But the main love story revolves around Drew and Meredith, who are, again, very real people. And watching the documentary, two things about the real Meredith that really struck me was when she was asked the question, "What do you like to research?" Which you would assume people, and she said, and she looked away and said, "I don't like that question." It was also very weird to see her with her mother because, spoiler alert, that's written very differently in the show. And the other is when Dr. Amigo takes her and Drew in to another room and tries to get them to go to. He doesn't have to try at all. Meredith practically is so emphatic that it even surprises the real Dr. Omega. And I'm like, right there with you, buddy, because you don't expect that as a viewer. But these are very real stories. It's heartfelt, and I run a podcast with the team, and if I could have bought the entire front row and put all of them in the seats. My parents, unfortunately, have not seen the show. That's for the next iteration. But it's like, and the prom, speaking of that again, it did transfer into a beautiful high-budget film via Netflix. So never say never.
Correct. Correct.
To that.
The what's beautiful. All I can say right now is the future is very bright, and it's very exciting, and the show has a very long life, and I just can't wait for the world to see it. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was so hard watching it close, but a lot of shows do that and then go on to have very successful long legs in other forms.
It's totally, you know, and the industry right now is very, very complex and very challenging. And I think, you know, we were in a season that has been one of the hardest in many years.
Yeah,
and,
because people are just coming back to theater, and a lot of them are still afraid. I mean, some are. And then you have streaming theater, which before the pandemic, no one thought was ever going to happen. I'm a very amateur actor with one of the only of Broadway theater companies that act and cater to disability talent, theater breaking through barriers. I mentioned to you earlier, I was cast as the lead in a musical, and my pathological love, quote unquote, is musicals. And so to actually be cast in one, even one as short as 20, 25 minutes, and get to sing everything from Newsies to Les Miserables, it blew my mind sky high that I actually got paid for it. I would have done it for free. Not that I should, but that's George, how much I adore musicals. And so, like, we could talk for hours on every how you and Rebecca, and I hope I'm able to get you and her together to really do a deep dive.
Sure.
Because that, I mean, literally, I've listened to this 50 times over. I can almost quote the whole thing back to you.
Yay!
I'm not going to sing it to you.
I was just going to say, I can't wait to hear you sing Building Momentum or Under
Oh, yeah.
Control
Yeah. Building
or.
Momentum and Waves and Wires. Those are two of the showstoppers. And I
Oh,
mean,
thank you.
on the next episode, when I get you and Rebecca together, please make that happen
Oh, I will.
somehow.
I totally will.
It's like, because you have to write character songs for every character, but
Yeah.
also include the other characters, and then be very aware of the quote unquote lead love story, which is another angle of why do you think Broadway is always uber obsessed with the lead love story, or thankfully not in this production, the lead love triangle, which you don't really have that much of. But I know you have a hard stop in a few minutes. I wish I could keep you
Yeah.
6 more hours, but
We'll do it
I mean,
again. We will do it again too.
let's do that someday,
Yeah.
somehow. But the closing questions
Sure.
that I always end the episodes on. First of all, you're doing a reunion performance on the 20th.
Correct. Monday, Monday, May 20th at 8 p.m. at the Palladium Times Square, which is
And
a really cool concert venue.
yeah, and that's really the only reason why I'm staying in New York so long,
Oh, amazing.
because it's that important of a show. And if there are, and I hope there are, inspiring actors, self-advocates, and I actually met a actor who is autistic, who was standing behind me and my aunt in line. She actually introduced me to the Mezzanine app, which allows you to track and to record all of your pads theater going, which,
Oh.
and they're not sponsored yet. But
Okay.
I mean, but that app is such a godsend for a person who makes a pseudo other career on going to different musicals and being
Yeah.
able to track them and have them be in all one location that you can access.
That's cool. I have to look into that.
So if there are, and I really hope there are any inspiring self-advocates, actors, composers, what would be some action steps that you would give them as they start out on their career?
I think number one, follow your heart all the time, you know, learn as much as you can. And but there's only one you, you know. And so I feel like, especially in this industry, you know, you always hear people want this, people want that, people want that, people want that, which, you know, it's commercial theater, so I understand that. But you have to write, you there's a but again, there's only one you, so you have to write from the heart. And I think that's what Rebecca and I have always done, and we're very grateful for that. You know, I feel like we got our doctorate in this Broadway experience, You know,
You
you don't,
certainly did.
you know, we learned things that you can't learn in the classroom. You know, it's all about experience. So I think the more that you put your work out there, surround yourself with good people that you trust, that you love, that you value, because who you want to create with, you know, because again, it is a community. So, you know, and you really have to trust the feedback from the people that you let in, you know? And so there's always a case of too much feedback, you know, and only you know what's right, you know? So I think that's a really good, you know, a big piece of advice that we've learned along the way. But, you know, I mean, even if you're getting out, you know, self-produce your readings, get people together, hear your work. You know, there are so many people in this industry. You don't need to have a, you know, a produced 29-hour reading to hear your work. Get people to come over and for a table read, you know, and just do it, you know. And so I think that's a really great, you know, way that we started out. You know, we were really lucky to have mentors in our life from NYU and early before that. So, you know, we were really kind of guided along the way, and which I love that we're in a place now that we can be mentoring the next generation of young writers. And so, you know, and it, in that vein too, you know, there's so many organizations, fellowships, the Dramatists Guild Fellowship, Rhinebeck Writers Retreats, the Johnny Mercer Grove at Goodspeed Musicals. There are all these different places out there that nurture young writers and work. And, you know, so I would really take advantage of all of those organizations. And honestly, that's how everything led us to the next step, you know?
Yeah.
And Ars Nova is another great organization that really nurtures young, exciting talent. So, you know, there are so many different things, but I think on a meta level, you know, just really, there's only one of you, you know, and follow your heart, because that's what people respond to at the end of the day,
absolutely.
You know, so you have to listen to it.
And so I like to think that both people with disabilities and people who have yet to discover or embrace their disabilities, hopefully they listen and watch this show as my guests. And we've talked a lot on this episode, and I hope it's only the first part of several episodes we do together. What do you hope that people with disabilities take away from everything we've talked about? And what do you hope that those who have yet to discover or embrace their own disabilities take away from this episode?
Well, I think, you know, I always think of this show as the start of the conversation, you know, and I really hope that this show and everything that we've discussed today makes them feel that, like, you can go out and get your work heard or seen, or, you know, and people are going to listen, and people are going to, you know, treat you as artists, you know. And I think that is the whole point of what we're doing, and you know, our industry has just been like this for so long. And so I really hope that being your authentic self, and because, like I said before, only you know what you can write, only you know what you're going to say, only you know what you're going to put out into this crazy world, you know. And so just having the confidence and, like, you know, the confidence to be who you are and to make your voice heard, I think is, you know, the biggest part of all of this.
And what do you hope that people who have yet to discover or embrace their own disabilities take away from not only this episode, but the show and the documentary of the same name.
Yeah, well, I think especially with the autism community, it's ever changing, right? And so I really hope that audiences learn more about the disability community and the autism community that they didn't before, or they learned how, you know, proper language to use, or, you know, different things that are ever changing. And, you know, we've had a lot of audience members write to us and say, seeing the show actually made me go get evaluated. You know, they've learned about themselves in different ways.
Wow.
Isn't that powerful?
Yeah, that's
which I think
incredible.
is super cool. I mean, I can count on five stories that I know of just by close family and friends, even, you
wow.
know, that has been really, really cool. You know, but also I really hope that it has taught us to have patience. And I really hope that it teaches us to step back, see ourselves in different instances and in the characters that you see on stage, and just to lead with grace and love and patience. I think that's a huge part of it.
It's been such a pleasure finally getting to interviewing you. I hope to interview you and your creative writing partner to do a very deep dive into the soundtrack ins and outs.
Yeah.
But my friend, it's such an amazing honor to have met you through the happenstance of TDF. Randomly assigning
Amazing.
me
It's
that
amazing.
seat, but also George to bask in the amazing work that you and the creative team helped bring to life. It's shocking that it took this long to tell that story, but it came at a time where we all needed it, and the people who were fortunate enough to see it were touched that it word of mouth was not a problem. The last week of the run almost completely sold out. You could not get a ticket, and I hope the reunion show and whatever comes next, hopefully Netflix or HBO is listening. They're not, but one only dream. Because this is the time. It's feel good, yet it's feel good. But there's a difference between being just feel good for feel good sake and having a lot of heart and soul and being able to have your mind expanded.
Thank you so much, Keith. I mean, it has been, you know, one of the greatest, you know, projects and joys of my life, seriously. And I think the coolest thing is that the community that has formed and that it continues to form, and that's the most exciting thing. So the show is for that community. So I'm so thrilled. So thank you.
And thank you, and I will see you in a few weeks.
Yeah, see you in a few weeks, and we'll get something else on the calendar with Rebecca.
You have been listening to Disability Empowerment Now. I would like to thank my guests, you, our listener, and the Disability Empowerment team that made this episode possible. More information about the podcast can be found at disabilityempowermentnow.com or on our social media at Disability Empowerment Now. The podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts or on the official website. Don't forget to rate, comment, and share the podcast. This episode of Disability Empowerment Now is copyrighted 2024.